All right, we are sitting in Bellevue, Nebraska today with Angie, John, and Zoe. So you might hear Zoe talk a little bit. We'll interview you too, right? She's like, I want to be in it too. All right. So we we connected through Instagram somehow. Right. I'm not really sure how. And I think that that's the coolest thing is like I just get to meet the coolest people. And as much as I loathe social media, I think that it's also really fantastic because I'm able to meet people all over the world.
Yes. You're able to get into people's genre, into their headspace, into their area, and you know what they're passionate about or what they're not passionate about.
You meet people and you would have never met before.
Yeah, absolutely. We wouldn't have bumped into the beautiful strength bus. It just wasn't going to happen, you know. And so social media did that, branched that, bridged that for so many people. And it's doing that for so many people today if it's used right and correctly.
Yeah. So we're just sitting out in front of a Skate City.
Skate City.
We had to move. We thought
Nebraska.
It was close.
We want to make sure that we give Dave a shout out. Skate City, he's got a great place here, and he's allowed us to sit here in his parking lot that accommodated you.
Right.
In a place where I know accommodating you has not been an easy task on your journey.
It's a little bit big, for sure. So, enough about me. I want to hear about you guys. I know when I talked to John on Instagram, and he said, you know, I have a great story, but also my wife has a great story. And
right.
Then obviously you probably have a really great story together too. So
we do.
Take the stage. You get a good 45 minutes, if not more, just to tell your story. And I always say, you know, tell it as if you're telling your mini biography, but think of the one person out there that needs to hear it, because I'm sure there's several.
Yeah, we're all here turning our trauma into somebody's blueprint or survival guide. I've heard it say so many times, and I've said it to so many people. So our life has layers, and to tell all the layers, we couldn't do that in 45 minutes. But why I was here, and one of the biggest things that I wanted to do was, I've always had a lot of spotlight on me since I lost my leg, and the amputee, a part of that story has always been just huge, you know, huge.
Yeah.
And
huh?
I just wanted to get high, and I just wanted to sit.
So what I wanted to do was I wanted to be able to shine some light on my wife,
mm-hmm.
Angie, and her version, because it's not told that much.
Yeah.
So, well, it makes you emotional when you give. I get emotional when you give from a place of realism.
Right.
And letting somebody be bigger than the problem.
Right.
Is huge.
Right.
So, that's what we're here to do and help people promote.
Right. Yeah. I appreciate it. I love it.
Yeah, it's a complex story, I would say that.
That's
So where do you want to begin?
I guess we can begin when we met.
Yeah.
Around the time we met. I was actually dating his friend at the time.
Yeah.
And his friend had just gone to jail. And so John and I just became friends, and then that kind of turned into more, and, you know, we got together and
things moved pretty fast.
So we,
as Zoe will
test. We started dating, ended up getting married.
Okay,
when we got married, I was 6 months pregnant, and come to find out, I was pregnant with twins.
Oh, wow.
Yes, out of the gate, four hands.
Yeah. The doctor actually came in the office when I had my ultrasound, and turns off the lights, and he says, all right, let's see if you're having twins, you know, jokingly.
Yeah.
So he comes over, turns the monitor on, you know, starts, you know, checking my stomach, and it's like, oh, you are having twins.
I remember coming home, it was so amazing.
Yeah, it was a little shocking, for sure. I never thought I'd have twins, but come to find out, you know, after you're 30, you're more likely to have twins.
Oh, really?
It's kind of your body's way of saying, okay, you need to hurry up and have some kids now because you're not going to be able to for very much longer.
What happens when you're 40? Am I looking at a bunch of kids? Like,
oh, my
yeah.
God.
I guess it's any time
you're
40, so. I mean, I had her when I was 39, so.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we had our twins, and I already had a daughter. She was, I think, 8 years old when my twins were born. Yeah. You know, just trying to make things work, and had some complications with Lexi at first. She was in the NICU for probably 3 weeks.
Yeah, we didn't even see the color of her eyes for a month. It's just
she was just, they put her, they intubated her, like, pretty much right away. She had pulmonary hypertension.
So that was very hard.
So that was pretty stressful.
We left the hospital with one baby, and
then had to go
to another hospital to be with another baby that was in an incubator, take care and nurse one child and watch. It was crazy. Mm-hmm.
And all the while, while you'd been married 6 months.
Well, by the time we had her, you know, it was like, well, yeah, actually, yeah, 6 months. I guess that would be the math.
Yeah, so, yeah, there we were in Children's Hospital in St. Pete already, with our hands through these holes, touching our little baby, nursing another one.
But, yeah, it was crazy. It turned out okay, and she's got a perfect bill of health now,
yeah.
And she's going to be 11 years old next week, so.
We still get the helicopter bill sometimes. She got a good bill.
Yeah, they'll get you with that helicopter bill for sure.
But no, it was great. It was a struggle.
Yeah, so. And we had another kid, Bridger. He's just under 2 years old, or 2 years younger than them. And that's right around, like, shortly after. He was probably about 8 months when John had his accident, fell off the roof. That's how he ended up losing his leg.
He fell off a roof?
Yeah, just cleaning the gutters. I was getting off the roof and fell about eight foot and punctured an artery behind my knee. And doctors missed it. And, just go from there. But anyway, you need to keep going, Bridger.
He was on the roof cleaning the gutters, and all of a sudden I hear this, you know, commotion, and then yelling or whatever. And so I go out there and he's laying on the ground. So I hurry up and get the car and pull it around to the back of the house and take him to the hospital right away with, you know, our three little kids that we have. So I take him, drop him off there, and, you know, they came and got him and took him to the emergency room. And, you know, I just went back home with them because that was the easiest thing to do then. Take three little kids into the emergency room. So he calls me after a couple hours and, you know, says, okay, I'm ready to come pick me up, and, you know, tells me he broke his, I think, tibia.
Fractured my tibia is what they told me I did. Just simple thing, see a specialist in the next 3 days and they'll get you set up with what you need to be going. I welded for a living. I'd done all kinds of construction work. Broken bones. Yes. I knew it was going to be 6 weeks of la la la, and I'd be back to walking.
Yeah, so they gave him, you know, pain medicine and had him follow up with an orthopedic surgeon to schedule an MRI, or just to go see the orthopedic surgeon.
Right.
So that was like within the next, I think it was the next day maybe.
Daddy's going to get sent in the morning.
Yeah. So we go to that appointment. He goes and sees the orthopedic surgeon, and he tells him that he's going to have him schedule an MRI. Well, we couldn't get in till like the next Monday. This happened, I think, on a Monday or a Tuesday. So almost a whole week would have went by before he would have, you know, went in to have his MRI. So
I was trying to excuse me and he had money.
Those, you know, couple days or whatever, he was in a lot of pain, wasn't sleeping real good.
My baba.
And then all of a sudden, I think it was that Friday, he's like, I'm going to go lay down. It was like maybe 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, okay, good. So he went and laid down. You know, I went about my day, closed the door. I'm like, finally, he's going to get some sleep, you know, because he was up and down. You could tell he was so uncomfortable this whole time. Well, later that night, I go and I try and wake him up.
Because
he had been sleeping all day long, but he was snoring, and so I'm like, you know, I thought he was perfectly fine. So I go to try and wake him up. Can't wake him up. Shaking him, yelling in his face. So it was crazy. So I call 911.
It's so soft.
And they get there and, you know, they tell me he's in renal failure. He's dying. Yeah. He had stuff coming out of his nose too, like some kind of green discharge stuff. Yeah. So they come and get him and I follow him to the doctor or to the ER and finally, when somebody came in to talk to me, she's like, "Yeah, your husband's not doing really well. We're, you know, we don't know if he's gonna make it, and you know, but I'll keep you updated. And when we find out more, you know, what's going on, we'll let you know." So I don't know. Probably half hour goes by, and had another doctor come in. And in the meantime, they had the priest asked me if they wanted the priest to come in with me. I'm like, oh, great, this isn't...
It's a lot of new, heavy news.
Right.
When you're trying to know which way is up. Right. And then you see a priest.
I'm trying to call his mom.
That's not a hopeful environment.
Okay. Right.
Trying to call and let his mom know what's going on. And then I try and call my sister and my mom. And, you know, it was nighttime, so they were sleeping. And finally a doctor comes in, and he was an orthopedic surgeon, and he said, "Well, we find out what's wrong. There's an artery that's punctured behind his knee, and we just want to get your permission to go in for emergency surgery." So I said, "Yeah, do it." And,
yeah, it turned out okay. You're in the main compartment syndrome is what...
What does that mean?
It means that my leg, it swelled to its capacity. Started strangulating its own nerves and blood vessels and tissue endings. And
started letting off toxins.
It dying. And as it died, toxins were let off.
Going, getting filtered through his kidneys. And it was shutting his kidneys down.
Yeah, that's how you start to die. If just how anyone would start to die. It wasn't something that happened unique to me. That's what happens when your circulation cuts off.
Uh-huh.
And so they filleted open my leg, both sides. It stayed open.
Oh, yeah.
For
huge.
The longest time, it had to heal. It took 2 years to really, to walk, to have a step, to get a prosthetic.
Uh-huh.
So she pushed my wheelchair and...
yeah.
So did they amputate it at that surgery, no, or they tried to take it?
That was the hard part. They talked to me like I was going to keep it.
Okay.
The doctors are supposed to be empathetic, sympathetic, and root you on, I'm sure, but... I went through a lot, and I went through a lot of struggle, and just with the belief I was going to make it, and I was going to keep it.
The doctor just told him, "Well, you're just going to have to straighten your foot out. You're just going to have to try to walk straight."
Yeah, I felt I had a complex. I felt like, you know, maybe I didn't keep it because I didn't want it, and because I was working against whatever a doctor tells you,
right?
You know,
but after a little bit, after going to that doctor, this was the same doctor that he went to right after his accident, right. The one that was, you know, scheduling the MRI for him. After a little bit, he's like, I guess he didn't know what else to tell him, so he referred him to another surgeon, which was in Sarasota, so we went and saw him.
Yeah.
Hey, were you living in Florida?
Yeah.
We were living in Florida.
I was like, Sarasota, yeah, like from Omaha, you went to Sarasota?
Venice, Florida, yeah. Okay. Venice, Florida, next to Sarasota.
I guess we should have mentioned that part.
Yeah.
So yeah, we went and saw this other orthopedic surgeon, and
Patrick O'Neill.
Patrick O'Neill. He used to be an NFL football
player. Kicker for the Patriots.
Oh, gross. We don't like them. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
He also played for the Bears and one other team, yeah. I think. And then, he just quit football and decided to become a surgeon. So.
Wow.
So that was a unique situation.
But the first meeting with him, he's like, you know, they took x-rays, and he looked at the x-ray, he came in, he's like, "Well, I can do the surgery. I can, you know, move some tendons and straighten your foot out, but you're probably always going to be in pain for the rest of your life." Mm-hmm. It's like, "Or we can amputate." And that was like the first time we ever even thought that was like an option.
Yeah.
Or
don't know
even
why.
Hearing that.
It wasn't an option. I didn't even think
of it. I think pretty much right away, John's almost like, "Okay, yeah, I think
we
should do that."
Yeah, I accepted it like it was always an option, though, didn't I? But it... I can't remember it ever being
a doctor before that saying that.
But I was ready. I was ready right then.
Because you're already like almost a year in, 2 years?
Yeah, I've been
working 6 months.
And my leg was turning in. When your limbs start to die naturally, when you start to die, all your limbs start to come in.
Yeah, you had drop foot.
So I dropped foot. It was occurring. They had me in all these braces, mechanical tensioners, trying to pull my my ankles back over, my toes were curling under. And
so were you in pain all the
time? Yeah, I was in pain all the time. I was trying not to be in pain. I was trying to do things like I was going to recover that never was going to recover from. And I was going through all the actions that somebody would take that was going to have a 100% complete recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Without any possible way of that happening.
Okay.
Right.
So it was relentless. And I was causing myself a lot of pain, along with the pain I was naturally in from my foot turning in. So, yeah,
I think maybe the doctor's like, well, maybe you should go home and think about it a little
bit
first.
Yeah, I was a little too gung-ho.
Yeah, because he was pretty gung-ho. But
it's pretty permanent.
Yeah.
It is. Now looking back, yeah, I see.
But, yeah, we ended up, you know, scheduling the appointment to have it done. We had it done the day before our twins' 3rd birthday.
Mm-hmm. I need the twins.
Yep.
So went in early that morning, had his, you know, it's below knee, so yeah. It's like mid-calf down.
I was able to meet with a doctor that created the glove for Winner the Dolphin.
I'm going to be a
Dolphin Tail movie.
Have you ever seen that?
The movie A Dolphin's Tail?
Dolphin with a prosthetic tail.
I don't know this. Okay. I mean, I recognize the movie, but I've never watched it.
That's the doctor I went and talked to. And okay. He was the one that looked at me, and he just says, what kind of life do you want to have? What kind of quality of life do you want to have?
Yeah. And he was an amputee.
He had lost his leg in his childhood to a lawnmower accident.
Okay.
And he said, you want to carry that dead leg around everywhere you go? And he was so honest, so brutal, but in a nice, I don't know, some way that I could deal with it.
Uh-huh.
And,
which helped, you know.
Yeah, it did. So I just knew what to do. I just knew it. Without knowing why I needed to do it, I knew I needed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, your bus is like that. You just know you need to, but you don't know why.
Right.
Sometimes why you're doing it.
Right.
And that was the whole strength that just drove us forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Had to cut off, and Dr. O'Neill looked in the next day, and he said, how are you feeling?
Pops his head in.
I said, I want to go home. My twin's birthday's tomorrow. He said, I see it happening.
I was in a wheelchair. Take your leg off, and you left
they
the hospital
They cut it off,
the next
and I
day.
Went home. Yeah. I was at my their birthday party. He picked the cake up on the way home. I was in the back seat. So, yeah, you can do it. You can do what you set your mind to. You got to have some help from doctors, too. But
his dad was staying with us at the time, so we had help with our kids. And so I spent the night in the hospital with him after he had his leg amputated. We left the next day.
There's parts of this I still don't remember.
Wow.
And I just remember the nurse coming out. He's like, bless your husband's heart. He is just so positive. And of course, you know, he's got drugs in his system, too.
I'm loot-legged.
Makes him more happier, too. But he's like just sticking his leg up, looking, you know, like that. All
I had a good attitude always about it. It's just
now, have you always been like that? Or was this like just
I think I got a better
situation?
Attitude after this happened, but I've always had an adaptive attitude. I've always been one that just sees it as more excitement than the end of the line or the... I just never saw anything as terrible.
You want to see the way?
Airplane. She hears an airplane. Not yet.
But not like I am now. I don't think I was ever as grateful for things as I am now.
So, yeah, that was just, I mean, that was the beginning of the hard part, I think. I don't even think that was the hardest part. Just, you know, mm-hmm. learning to adapt to it and... And I think you go through a bunch of stages, you know, after having an amputation.
Yeah, I couldn't literally, I wouldn't leave the kids with me for a long time after.
You didn't want to have the kids with you? Oh, like by your, like.
He just didn't trust himself.
By myself,
you know, like,
so I mean, anywhere she went.
You know, falling or.
It's, you know, she just had all the burden on her. She'd had a job. She was working. She'd worked for Publix grocery store for 11 years at the time. But to say it was a career.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a manager.
She had
at Publix, and his dad was staying with us. And after a little bit of time, you know, it's just, you know, like living with your in-laws is it's a little trying. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, I'm ready for him to go home. I think we can do this. I was asking him how he was doing. And
are you kidding?
He's like, okay.
I'm not going to stand in the morning.
Oh, okay. You know, he's basically, you know, told his dad, he's like, I think we're ready for you to go home.
Yeah.
We're gonna try doing this on our own. And Well, that kind of failed miserably. He ended up getting, this was after his, you know, his, he had a big incision that was healed. He had his prosthetic, but we found out that once you get like a sore on the scar tissue, and if you don't take care of it right away, it just gets, you know, worse and worse, and then it takes about a good 6 months for it to heal.
Mm-hmm. Half a year. Every year, if something happens, I'm looking at half a year down.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it still happens to this day, but he's perfected it to where he knows exactly what to do to get it to heal pretty quickly, you know. And he can do it, you know, our kids are older, so our older kids help with Zoe now. And but back then, yeah, I was like, well, now what do we do? Your dad's gone home, I work, you know, I had stepped down at this point.
It got real, right, real fast.
And then were you able to work at all, or are you out of work just sometimes?
No,
I wasn't working. I was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Just a mess. I was addicted to my pain medication. Yeah. I was just, she was fighting that. She was fighting trying to hide my pain medication from me. It's not just a luxurious story where everyone just got hurt and bandaged up some boo-boos and kissed it and got, no, it was downright dirty. Awful.
Plus, John has the mentality of, if one's good, then a bunch of them must be better, you know.
Yeah.
You know, this is about, the real story is I'm hard to control.
Yeah.
And you give me the reins, and I will try to run into the wall to know what the wall feels like. For some reason, I'm curious.
Yeah.
Call me crazy, turns out they'll prescribe all kinds of things
and I was
that
in
you
Florida,
don't necessarily need.
Right. A really bad place to be and then become addicted to that.
Right.
So then it was, she fought that. Just,
right.
I've always told her I have no idea how you did that.
Medications.
Well, and they're like medications that you need for pain.
For anxiety.
They went farther. I was on Adderall. I was on painkillers. I was on fentanyl patches, sleeping pills. I took 14 pills 4 times a day.
Yeah. So,
imagine that. Imagine being the wife to someone emotionally vacant and almost humanly vacant.
And probably and very unpredictable.
And you got to leave your kids with them.
Yeah.
And you got to love them, too.
Yeah.
And trust them like it's okay and build their strength up. You imagine that psychotic back and forth?
And did you get any breaks or any time, like you time at all?
Not really. I remember, this was when he was still in the hospital, but Zoe, come here.
I'm watching her, baby.
The only one I'm concerned about is if she hits the yellow button.
Okay.
They made it the one button that is the whole other color. It's hard for a kid to push on it, though.
Yeah. But when he was still in the hospital, you know, I still had to do things. I had to go get groceries. I was pushing around two big grocery carts. One of the carts had, you know, I think it was my youngest son who was still in a high chair or a car seat. And then my twins were in the other one. And then, you know, the groceries. So I'm, you know, pulling two buggies around Walmart. Just trying to, you know, make that work. And, I mean,
that fight or flight.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I ended up, once he got that sore on his leg after everything had healed, he had his prosthetic. He couldn't. There's no way he could have watched our kids. And, you know, basically he couldn't put his leg prosthetic on during that whole time, so I ended up retiring.
Yeah, completely, you know, just
from Publix. Thankfully, I had like some stock I could cash in and stuff, so I quit for a year and stayed home. And
but she did it in cycles. That's what impressed me. She went from has taken time off and she stepped down in her job. She was trying to be so responsible. She didn't just say, I can't do it. You know, this is jobs too much. She stepped down, and I think she had to get pretty much almost pushed out. Like, you know, are you sure you can keep doing this?
Well, yeah.
And she said,
I just never really.
Well, you said you saw
option.
Me in the hospital that time.
But I had no idea what to do.
Now, are you the type otherwise. Of person that allowed her to help you, or did you fight that?
I didn't know how to let. I would have allowed it if I'd known how to let her help me. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know how to let her help me, and she didn't have a clue. And I couldn't help myself, and I had so many demons and so much baggage. I was trying to, that's why you need to sort your demons out and your baggages out, because when something happens, they just intensify,
mm-hmm.
and you're too weak to fight them in that moment. And So once I got a lot of demons under control, which took a lot of time, took a lot of heartache, and surrendering and accepting and being bigger than an ego. Doing this, seeing things the other's perspective, knowing that I don't understand a lot. I know a lot about being an amputee, but I know nothing about living with one. Absolutely nothing about what it is to live, wake up with a dude without a leg every day.
Yeah.
That fathers my kids.
And watching him go through those emotions and like.
Yeah, I cried a lot for a long time. I cried in the beginning of it. Yeah. I still get emotional because I'm not all the way healed yet.
Right. Do you ever talk to your kids, your older kids, about that, about their experience and how they felt going through it?
Not really, because they were so little. That's like the only thing they even know.
Yeah.
I mean, they were 3 and 1 when he had his leg.
Yeah, they would actually help, like, would see bandages being changed, big, bad bandages and stuff. And we had to, I think sometimes that's why I couldn't react a certain ways, because I was being watched by little kids
I don't know. I think they've just, it's all they've pretty much known, but at the same time, yeah. I think it's helped them become more aware, and I don't know. I think it's done something cool with them when it comes to, like,
they attach to realistic issues, mm-hmm. very emotionally, empathetically, but in powerful, almost more empowering than we are sometimes. Our kids seem a lot stronger. That's weird. Sometimes we're like, God, you know, we're not even that strong. My son, he's always empowering and helpful and kind and just giving.
Our oldest son, he is.
Lexi is just like a mystic soul. She just knows something in you, and you know she does. You don't know how.
Yeah.
So it's done something for them.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing that they've known him, you know, and how he is with the prosthetic, and I don't know. I just think it makes them a better kids. And
they've seen a lot. They've seen a lot, and we hear it in ways that we get that acknowledgement back. Is they act different from other kids. We've had teachers say, you know, your kids rally in this way and are caring in ways that we're not used to seeing other kids being. But that's traumatic. That's from witnessing traumatic experiences way too early to understand them. I don't know. One of these days we'll maybe be able to talk to them. And as our 2-year-old escapes, we'll be able to talk to them. You know, another time you come through, you could interview them and talk to them.
Yeah.
Because I know that's another perspective that a dad and a mom probably need to hear.
Yeah.
I still hear my son tell me things that he remembers that I did. Yeah. That I just don't remember doing them, or I do remember doing them too, and I'm just shook.
Yeah.
I can't believe you remember that. How do you remember that? You know, but it's why it's so important, you know, that we process our trauma. It's important to process it, not pretend in it, not to boast about it because we've managed to look in the mirror for 8 hours a day even. We have to process that. Or it just trickles down into everything around us, the kids, the friends, the families, the community.
Yeah.
You know, it's big.
So do you feel like your marriage is stronger because of this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine bringing things that I can't imagine bringing to her to anyone else.
So, yeah, I mean, because when we lived in Florida, we didn't have my family's in South Dakota, and his family, most of them were in Tennessee at the time, so, you know, we've never really had, you know, close, like, anybody to help that's close, or, you know, a lot of support from family.
And when I came out about being sexually abused by my sister, you know, when all the gloves came off and all the tape came off and everything did process it, came out, which was another story as to why I have so many demons. I lost that family, so I only had her.
Yeah.
Like, my mom died. That was who I talked to. My dad was the bad issue, and then that's all I've ever had. So that's got to be a lot to carry for somebody, to know that someone like that depends on you that way.
Mm-hmm.
Zoe.
Come, I can't see you.
I can see your arm.
I'm trying to get the door. Oh, are you trying to shut it? Here, I can shut it for you.
Sorry.
She's trying to fix it.
No, she's coming back.
Come on, honey.
You want me to shut it?
Yeah.
Okay. Bam.
Thank you.
You can take that pause break for some water or anything you want. Compliments that beautiful strength bus.
Right. And we're back.
And we're back. 3, 2, 1, and go.
Oh my God.
Unscripted and real.
Unscripted, real life going on right now.
Happening. It is.
Yeah, so after all that happened, we ended up moving to Colorado because, you know, the whole medical marijuana thing. John was trying to get off his pain medications, and
which it worked.
We found out that that's like the thing that really helped him with everything, with his anxiety, with his pain.
Yeah, it got me to a state where I could finally be diagnosed with something.
Right.
How do you diagnose yourself? If anyone's listening that has a lot of problems, fix some of those freaking problems, because you can't get a true diagnosis with all those issues looming over you.
Right.
You just can't find out what's wrong with me. And I have a huge anxiety disorder that is just from trauma. Adjustably, and of course I should. But I couldn't get to the issues of it.
Right.
All the madness.
Right.
And that helped me get rid of so many things and put me on just a natural path. Because I didn't just sit around and smoke in front of my kids and do stuff like that. There's a responsible way to do it medically.
Right.
You go somewhere where it's legal, first of all.
Right.
So you don't jeopardize the freedom of your children. You don't jeopardize going to jail. You don't worry about your home. And then you see a doctor and you use edibles. And there's things you can do so that you're not walking around crazy, you know. And you use it as a medication if you're ready to change, if you're ready to fix yourself.
Yeah, it honestly was our, like, saving grace.
I can't imagine having the clarity to make that decision while you're so foggy from everything that you're on and experiencing.
That's what I couldn't
Like,
either.
Where did you just did you come up with this idea? Like,
no,
hey, if we can go there?
We had gone to my my sister's house, and, you know, she smokes pot sometimes, and
we're on vacation. Yeah, this is the real story. You should hear
the real story. Seven strangers picked to sit in a bus.
Yeah, I mean, come on. That's what this is about, the real.
Yeah.
No, we went on vacation, and, you know, he had smoked some pot with my sister, and him and I went to the grocery store, and he was just joking around and just being really, like, easy to get along with, and I just remember telling him, like, you're so fun this way. I don't even think I've ever seen you in this light before.
Yeah.
Because, you know, anxiety medicine sometimes can make you irritable, or it just kind of changes. Or, at least it does with John.
Yeah.
Totally changes
his
personality.
I have a personality that medications work backwards on.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to make you go fast. It makes me go slow. It's supposed to make you go slow. It makes me go super fast.
Okay.
Pain pills I can't go to sleep on. It's crazy. Everything
and then lack of sleep can lead to a whole bunch of other issues,
too. It's madness.
I just totally saw him in a new light, and I'm like, I don't know, I think we just started talking about it after that, maybe, and, you know, we were still living in Florida, and he had been trying to, you know, I think maybe he didn't have his medicine with him when we went to see my family. Maybe that's what kind of sparked it. So
the anxiety medicine, the volumes, and all that other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just tons of baggage.
So, yeah, we kind of made a decision. It was a pretty quick decision. I think, we made the decision, and then we moved,
I knew, too, though. I knew
3 months
was,
later.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. We sold.
Quick as you can.
We went from a 3-bedroom house.
Uh-huh.
You could have put our U-Haul, 9 of our U-Hauls in this thing. It was a 6x4, 3-bedroom house. We gave our dryer away and took the load of clothes out of it and gave it away.
Oh, wow.
We were that, I think we were that desperate to change.
Right.
Even though we didn't,
so
at the time,
stuff.
We couldn't have said that. We wouldn't have known to say, we were fixing to do something different no matter what.
Yeah.
But we did. We took 3 kids, 6x4 trailer, 1-legged man, and left. Went to Colorado.
The only furniture we took
to a sight unseen apartment.
Wow.
And it was terrible.
Terrible.
It was awful when we got there.
Oh,
we ended up in the ghetto. You couldn't have moved on up any higher from
major
that.
Major culture shock, I'll tell you that. We ended up moving to a not-so-good part of town in Colorado Springs. Because, I mean, we didn't know. We didn't know anybody that was living there. And we just kind of, you know, picked a place. like, oh, we got a place rented. Okay, that's one thing off our list of things to do, so we don't have to worry about that.
Too bad it was
we moved there. I didn't have a job set up. I'm like, oh, I can find a job. No big deal. I've been a manager in a grocery store. They have grocery stores there.
We end up on food stamps and
It took me like a month to find a job.
That was a 3-bedroom house in Florida on the beach. 10 minutes from the beach.
Yeah.
We were all of a sudden on food stamps. In a rundown, illegally sublet apartment.
Yeah,
on the third floor.
It was a 2-bedroom apartment. The guy that was managing the place he didn't put one of our kids on the lease.
So he could do it, yeah. So we got evicted after the first year with nowhere to go.
Oh, wow.
No, we had to go to their
sister apartment. Well, we had to talk our way into it, but at first we just got the eviction notice on the
door. Which ended up being worse than the first place we were in.
Yeah.
So infested with cockroaches.
Yeah. We go to another place.
Then that place gets the plumbing fails, and it floods the apartment. We ended up having to move out of that one down the hall to another one of their apartments.
2 days before Christmas. We have to tear the Christmas tree down. Repackage all the Santa Claus stuff, get all the presents, totally wipe out Christmas, and move four doors down. 2 days before Christmas.
Oh, my God. And not just you two and
three kids. Yeah. No family, no really friends, no nothing. There's been too much happening at that point to have friends. You don't have time to meet anybody. I'm walking to go pick our kids up in the afternoon from school. You're watching. We're about to run out of time.
No. I was just making sure it was still recording.
So, yeah.
This was after.
Please don't stop. This is, like, entertaining.
Yeah, this is also after we pulled our small U-Haul trailer in our Ford Escape.
Yeah.
Which, you really shouldn't pull anything in a Ford Escape.
Especially
no, not up mountains. So, like, a month or two after we moved to Colorado, our transmission, we need a new transmission in our car.
Yeah, that happened.
So then I'm walking the kids to school every day.
In the snow.
It was just like everything that could have happened did happen.
Was there any ever day that you were just like, I'm done. I just don't want to do this anymore.
There had to be. This is when you need to say it.
Maybe. I mean, I can't think of any one, like, moment, but... Yeah, it was just so exhausting. I don't know. I don't know if it was... I don't think either Florida or Colorado was worse than the other, but it was just different, you know.
Different kind of pains, different places. Bad ones. No matter where we went.
Yeah. Then,
Self, we were doing it. We were victims of our own results.
Then Zoe comes out of nowhere.
Right after my mom died, yeah. My mom passed, and that was just a miraculous thing, the closest thing I was close to. And she wasn't even supposed to be able to have kids.
No, I had my
tubes tied. We did the medical thing, and nothing, and it was no problems, no nothing.
Yeah, 6 years had gone by.
My mom passed, and some wicked weird shit happened. I told her one day, too, I was like, you're pregnant. She's like, go to sleep, you're nothing. And, she had felt, you tell him what you, it's crazy.
Oh, well, right after his mom died, I don't know, a couple days after his mom died. It's about to get spooky.
Yeah.
No, John always goes to bed before I do. So he had been sleeping for a little while. I come in the bedroom, go to bed, you know, rolled over on my stomach. And then all of a sudden I feel like this tapping on my shoulder, on my right shoulder. He was sleeping on the right of me. So I look over, he's still asleep. John's always been really close with his mom, and he's always been the more spiritual type person, and I've always been the more skeptical person, and, you know, I question everything. And so, you know, I tell John, I woke him up. I said, did you just tap me on my shoulder? He's like, no. I'm like, okay. And then, like, 2 days later, same thing happens. I go to bed. Well, this time, as soon as I lay down, I feel at the end of the bed like somebody sat down at the end of our bed. And again, our kids were sleeping, John was sleeping. So we're pretty sure it was his mom.
And miraculously impregnated you?
No.
Or immaculate conception?
No, I don't think that happened. I just feel like...
We feel like Zoe somehow
she was
connected
there.
Connected to it.
Yeah.
The death of my mom, the totally unexpected birth. We weren't really trying. It happened. No, we don't think that.
Nothing crazy.
We're not writing this down. But that would be a good one.
No, yeah. I just feel like Zoe's.
It's just
getting pregnant was always somehow connected to his mom.
Yeah.
So I had my ultrasound.
She has a lot of gestures like my mom does.
Yeah.
And she's.
We knew she was going to be a girl. Like, we never questioned it.
Yeah.
We knew her name.
We're like, yeah, we know.
Before we knew what her name meant, it means life.
Yeah.
We didn't know that. We were like, Zoe. I said, I wonder what it means. It means life. It's just, there's been a lot of things. So we kind of. It's how we're connecting to everything together to build strength, to be. Strong to keep going.
Yeah.
Because after you lose your family, then your mom, then your leg, and she's lost all that personal life for the last several years.
Right.
What do you do? How do you put things back together if you don't change your perspective and the narratives and the way you're, the images you're connecting to the stories, and the, so the stories somehow drive you more than, to do more things than drink and do drugs.
Right.
And feel sorry for yourself and look for pity in other people and... You know, you can empower yourself. You need a diaper change. And that's how real and raw this conversation on Beautiful Strength is. You can smell it if it's there and if it's not.
I'm going to go over here and
compare
that.
Well, you'll be the first official person to use the back as a changing area.
There you go. We didn't know. There you go. That's what this bus is. It represents to me what amputation represents to me. Is that everything about it is a new experience, but there's going to be something awkward in the approach, in the accepting, and even in the closure.
Yeah.
And that is what this bus is about. And that's what I think resonated me with you in the beginning. I didn't even know the whole story. It was just
Did you even know my name?
No, I didn't know your name until the other day.
I know. I was like, hey, it's Annette. And he's like,
I know. I read off what I said to her. I said, I didn't know who it was. I just figured it's the wrong number.
Yeah,
I said, I called her a bimbo and everything. I said, I don't know. Well, not like that, but I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know this person. And I had a 573 number, which is not a Tennessee number, which is not
Florida number anywhere on this journey we've been on.
Yeah.
And
so how did you get from Colorado to Nebraska?
It is expensive to live in Colorado.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, horribly, and it's a beautiful place. Beautiful place. Very expensive.
I don't know if you can hear me from way over here, but we got to the point where
I can make it happen.
To buy a house. And we got approved and everything, and so we started looking, and even though people told us, you know, don't look in Pueblo, you don't want to live in Pueblo, I'm like, oh, it's probably not that bad. And I don't even know that it was, but for what we could afford and the houses that we, the couple that we looked at,
that's badass.
We're just like, yeah, I don't want to live here. I said, maybe it's time to rethink this Colorado thing.
Yeah.
So maybe we're just, you know, not meant to stay here.
Now, but isn't Nebraska one of, like, the... They don't have weed laws and stuff, right?
It's not legal here.
Yeah.
They have D8, what they call a D8, which is a form of THC, but it's not as strong. It's something that you can do legally and not get in trouble for.
Gotcha. The only reason I know that is because a bunch of friends from Iowa... who go to Colorado always like fear coming through Nebraska because they're like,
it
could
Nebraska
be a felony.
Nebraska doesn't like it either.
Yeah, I think Nebraska actually tried to sue Colorado.
Yeah, because they didn't want the hassle of people trafficking through here to get to there, which is understandable.
Right.
If you go to Colorado, there's a lot of towns that just not real flavorful because of.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know.
I do.
Believe me, I understand.
You act like you live with a 2-year-old. You have everything locked and.
Well, you have to when you're traveling
with us. I had a great belief.
No, I know, but it's like everything she does. I'm like, yeah, that's 2-year-old safe.
It's so yeah, we safe. Started second guessing the living in Colorado thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was rough. From the time we got there, it was just rough. I ended up finding a good job at Natural Grocers.
Was she still with?
Okay.
Transfer
management here for. Again.
And, okay.
You know, it's a good company to work for, and so we ended up in Nebraska because you know I'm like, I don't want to have to like start somewhere new again. I just want to be able to transfer if I can.
Yeah.
So I started looking at states where there was Natural Grocers, and I have a niece and now a nephew too that live in Lincoln. And I had been to Omaha before, and I always liked it, you know, the old market.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I brought the idea up to John. John had been to Nebraska once. I think he worked there.
Okay.
Before we knew each other, and so we started talking about, you know, Nebraska and the Omaha area, and there happened to be a couple job openings at the store I'm working at now for management. So I just, you know, on a whim, decided to apply for the one of the management jobs and got an a phone interview right away, and ended up, you know, she called me back like 2 days later and told me that, you know, she was offering me the job, and so we just.
How long have you been here then?
Since September.
Oh, so you're kind of fairly new. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, again, we're somewhere we still don't know anybody, which has been our path.
Well,
yeah.
No, but.
Well,
no,
now you know Dave. Is it Dave?
I know Dave. I want to come talk to Dave.
Yeah, we know Dave. But no, I have a niece and nephew that live in Lincoln. And then
we know our neighbors.
My mom and my sister and my other nieces and nephews are in South Dakota. And Mommy, Madison. It's only like 3.5 hours from here.
Okay.
So it's actually drivable. Like, we haven't lived around family this close.
No, that's been the funny, hard part about this is we've done it with no immediate personable, tangible support.
Yeah, there is no date night for John and I.
No, we've been there 11 years and never been out on a date.
Well,
yeah.
We have like a couple times, but. You can call it a day, I guess. You know, I had some.
But we didn't, you know, we've just.
You only have 13 been, more years,
yeah,
right?
Right. It just keeps sealing the fate.
Yeah.
So are you working now?
No, he stays at home with the kids.
That's a job.
He gets disability, so it helps.
Yeah, I get disability.
I work full-time management at Natural Grocers, and it works.
Yeah,
we got a nice place we're renting now. It's like so much.
We're here to buy a house. We were ready to buy a house in Colorado Springs.
Uh-huh.
We're actually already on the market. We were looking at houses, but
yeah, it's just
you couldn't get what...
You don't get much for your money there.
Right.
No, it has to be someone else's flavor. So that's basically where we're at now. We're fixing to start looking for a house so we can buy something, put some roots down, let the kids start having that secure feeling of where home is.
Yeah.
Because I want to have that for them. She wants to have it.
They're getting to the age where they need to be able to stay put and
have friends
and,
build memories, instead of, we just traveled around a lot.
Right.
So that's about
you see the pretty colors?
Where we're at.
Yeah, I don't think we... I don't know. We've had a lot of stressful things in our relationship, I feel like. But
so you feel like you're kind of on the other side of all that now? Or just still in the middle?
Yeah, I think we're both...
We're where we can finally put names to things now.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of wondering why we feel this way, we're able to talk about things a lot more clearly. Openly, we're able to.
Just being older now, too, I feel like.
Yeah.
And having Zoe, she's, 6 years younger than our youngest son, so I don't know. I feel like we're at a point where we appreciate things a lot more. We don't take things for granted as much as, we did when we were younger. And I don't know. I feel like we're both in a better place with our relationship and with ourselves now.
That's why we're at a better place.
Definitely
in our relationship
stronger.
With ourselves, we're in a better place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it starts there. But yeah.
Are you good with communicating with each other?
We're getting better.
We're getting
better. We're getting better. We're a lot better than we used to be. Used to be, we were not good. So
John's usually the over-communicator, and I'm the under-communicator.
What you see about me on the Instagram is really like who I am. I'm a blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just going to waterfall you real fast, and I'm going to fire hose you with all this information. And then I'm going to stand there and be like, well, you got nothing to say?
Yeah.
You're just going to just stand there and just drip dry? Really?
Yeah.
After I just spent all that time spraying you down, you're just going to drip dry.
So John's got better at listening, and I've gotten better at, talking. So.
Yeah. And listening, I'm getting better at listening. Just because I can talk, I'm learning, doesn't mean I'm a good communicator.
Mm-hmm. I say that because I've always been a talker, very well known as a talker. Like it, on my, is it what? Yeah. You see birds.
No, I didn't mean it bad. I need to learn to listen. No, but I'm learning to listen better.
When I was in school and stuff, there was always the report card. Annette is great. She's smart, but she talks a lot. Or she's keeping the plants alive or whatever. And I think this project has become a little bit better because it's a lot of listening. And it's a lot of people need to be heard. And just because you're quiet doesn't mean you don't have things important to say.
There's a lot going on at one time to listen to.
Yeah.
None of this is going to talk back to you and say, hey, I'm about to break down.
Yeah. No, I'll put that out there.
Don't do that because I'm going to fall off when you move. Like, you have to learn to listen to your intuition and learn from your mistakes for this to even roll down the road.
Yeah. But it's, I just think it's the coolest thing because I've met, I get to meet so many people. But it's not about me.
I know.
It's not about me at all. It's just about me being in the right place with the right people.
But you still look so big to people. Yeah. To me. It's bigger than my problems.
Well, it just shows you too that everyone has their own story and their own struggles that they've gone through.
And there's more to it than just whining about it. You can put some wheels on it and move it down the road.
Yeah.
Today we got to meet somebody and I faced conflict the moment I walked up to the bus and learned how to be comfortable in it.
Yeah.
I learned how to talk, shake a man's hand I didn't know. Which I knew how to do it. But not next to a big pink bus.
Right.
That was obviously the elephant room. That was my shock. That was my shaking the hands with the bus. I was like, okay.
I'm in here going, oh my God, I hope this is as cool as he thinks it's going to be. Or I hope this person is, my biggest thing is I hope this person is the person that I think that they are, which is hard because, and I understand, I'm not famous by any means, but I understand that whole fame thing, like, that you don't want to let somebody down. Like, I was like, I want this to be the coolest experience ever. And then I'm like, hey, come in. I got cords everywhere. We're illegally parked. Like,
we were both
honestly, that just makes me more comfortable when I can see the people are, real. And
I mean, this
quite
is...
not got everything together all the time.
Someday I'll have a video crew coming with me, and I think it's going to be great, but not anytime soon until I can get that big old grant money, right?
You're doing amazing things. I'm amazed to see it. We talk about doing things like this, and then to meet someone that had the bravery to jump.
It took me a very long time.
Back when we were in Florida, I was like watching videos all the time about tiny houses. I'm like, oh, this is so cool, and minimalism. And
without this bravery, though, it would have been hard for me to have my bravery to come out.
Yeah.
So, like, you took the hard step is the first step.
Yeah.
And so you're taking that first step for people.
And then I think it's awesome because the reason why this project is happening, though, is because people like you guys come out and tell your story, and that story will connect with one person, 20 people, 100, 1,000, who knows? Because I don't know what it's like to be you. I don't have any idea, but I know what it's like to be in the pursuit of happiness, and I think like that's what everybody is kind of doing.
An equal environment for us to meet, where everything is—it's just I don't know.
It's super cool.
It's super cool. It is. It's an environment that you can't duplicate, replicate. You can't do it. This is a really cool experience.
I have like about a 6-hour average is what people spend in here.
Wow.
I don't know what it is. Like, people just start hanging out, and then we're like, okay, we should do something. And we're just talking. Okay, we should do something. But I think a lot of times people don't get to sit down and just have conversations.
It doesn't grow small. You know, it just grows cozier. Yeah. That's the nice thing about it. It doesn't grow small.
Until you have to go to the bathroom. Then you got a place to go. That's like last night we were sitting in here. I was like, oh, my God. To pee so bad, and like, I mean, I can pee by myself. I'm still recording this, but this is an overshare probably. But I have a toilet that I haven't installed yet, so I have a bucket. I have a bucket, and it's awesome when I'm by myself. It's not so awesome to be like, hey, yo, I gotta go to the bathroom.
I'm just gonna sound a little funny, okay?
Yeah,
it's gonna echo a little bit.
Don't pay attention.
Don't worry about it. You do you, and I'll do me.
Right, and don't look at me. Yeah. Don't make eye contact. It'll be really
weird. Everybody face the back of the bus for a minute.
Like people who travel together, like even as a couple, and they're just in a van. I'm like, what did you just stare at somebody like the whole time? I don't know.
I know what you do. Do you shut the door?
Do you leave? Do you be like, hey,
just hang on,
go for a walk for a minute.
I'll be back.
Yeah,
right.
It's the hardest part. But any last words or anything you want to say? Any
thank you
words of encouragement to other people and
listen bigger.
Yeah,
listen bigger and give other people the spotlight. When when you've had your time, even in injury, even in things that you think that there's no way the world wouldn't want to see you, realize that you do that the wrong way, you overshine someone else. That's Angie, you know? Yeah.
Well, and just look at the, you know, the silver lining of things.
Yeah, everything has a silver lining, and every silver lining has a thing.
Because definitely John, when John became an amputee, it's really changed his outlook and his...
Yep, you know, your narratives, your perspectives.
Yeah.
They play together, and how you use those, the words you say, what you write about what you feel. If I didn't write about what I felt every day, I would go crazy. That's why Instagram's the way it is.
Yeah.
I'm not always writing about something happy happening, and sometimes not always about what's happening to me.
Sometimes it's just writing.
But sometimes I just have to process things, so I write it as positive as I can, not to just exclude anybody from the lesson and say, you're the asshole or nothing. Yeah. You know, it's like we all suffer, I think.
Yeah.
And Angie says when she looks at my page, other people see that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's about mental health. It's about struggle and being real.
Right.
Been the whole theme since we've walked in this bus,
right,
has been being real.
I think people need more of that, because there's such a, like when I said, you just look like you're so positive all the time. Yeah. And you're like, then you tell this whole story and I'm like, okay, but you still come out of it with a good attitude. Yeah. Some of those things that you guys have been through could have taken you completely out, or could have broken a marriage, or you know, all these different things. And
a lot of people.
Yeah. Takes grit to get through it. And that's why I say, like, you know, life can be messy, but it's also super beautiful.
It's also
our
mess to clean up if we will.
Yeah.
You know, we can clean them up.
Yeah.
Or best we can. Move on and adjust, adapt, or don't. Everybody's journey is about adapting.
Yeah.
In incredibly creative ways, too. Not in normal ways. If you keep trying to adapt to the world or adapt your situation, just as normal as possible, take a creative aspect and look at things. That's my advice. Look at things from just a crazy perspective. And the first perspective is that you could possibly be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably not right.
And it's hard. That's hard to admit.
It's my hardest one.
Oh, yeah.
That I don't know. That I don't know more about everything going on than somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm human as anybody else. I have my own problems, my own egos and ghosts and demons. Through a lot of them.
Yeah.
I got through a lot of them. I turned them into guardian angels, by the way. You can't.
Yeah.
You don't get rid of them.
Yeah.
You just turn them into beacons of light that look out for you finally. Where they used to just devour you.
Yeah.
Because I can't tell you how I stopped all the pills completely and stuff. Just did. Just the marijuana and the... But it was a lot of love, too, though. A lot of support.
Counseling.
Yeah. You don't want to hit that button, sweetie.
Yeah, my next advice is don't hit the yellow
button. Don't hit the yellow
button.
Anybody
comes on this bus, Live Real 101, don't hit the yellow
don't
button.
Don't hit the yellow button.
Right.
It's all happening with the yellow button.
Do you want to say goodbye?
Goodbye.
Say thank you for coming to the podcast.
Thank you. Go to breakfast.
Say have a great day.
Have a great day.
Oh, I love it. I'm going to stop it.